The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Mayor Giuliani exposes Hunter Biden's troubling computer contents.
Neither Hunter Biden nor Joe Biden have disputed a single thing that we put out on it. It reveals a massive criminal conspiracy.
But Twitter and Facebook shut down those spreading the truth.
These tech companies have way too much power.
And the censorship continues.
No American government, right or left, has ever suppressed free speech as much as Twitter, Facebook, Google, and YouTube.
We'll also look at why Joe Biden is hidden away.
His Zoom calls from the basement seem to be working for him.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And let me invite you to join us now by video. And follow me on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. And follow this program as well, at Town Hall Review. The week began with a bang. The New York Post, one of America's largest and oldest newspapers, ran a story on the alleged contents of Hunter Biden's computer. And pretty much immediately, both Facebook and Twitter blocked the story and shut down many accounts of those trying to post it. It was a blatant and a bold attempt to protect their beloved candidate, former Vice President Joe Biden. But it wasn't the only piece of Biden information big tech was working to keep out of the public eye. Two Salem hosts, Sebastian Gorka and Charlie Kirk, had their Twitter accounts locked for covering stories that cast Biden in a negative light. So it makes sense to start today's program with Sebastian Gorka's interview of Charlie Kirk.
So you made news and you shared it immediately as we walked on stage. You were sitting there waiting, and then you posted a tweet about election integrity and all these mail-in ballots and applications that are going out there. And as you pressed it, you were locked out of your account by Jack Dorsey and his jackbooted thugs. Charlie, tell us what the latest is and what you're going to do about it.
So I'm still locked out of Twitter. I have 1.8 million followers on Twitter, and I have not been able to tweet since last evening. I tweeted a widely reported story about 372,000 ballot applications that were rejected in Pennsylvania. I was quoting another story, and I did not include the word applications in my tweet. I just said ballots. And the story I was quoting said exactly that. And so the Twitter then basically used their ultimate authority to say, not just try and take exception with my tweet, but now they're holding my entire account hostage. It's like a Die Hard. It's like a scene out of Die Hard, like Nakatomi Plaza, that I'm a prisoner of their kind of outrageous demands, and they are now demanding that I not necessarily apologize, but admit fault and guilt and delete the tweet, and I'm not doing that. So we're in a constant, we're kind of staring each other down right now, where Twitter is asking me to correct this tweet, of which when I tweeted it, it was absolutely, completely, and precisely correct on all the widely reporting available. By the way, Dr. Gorka, there is still a tweet up right now on Twitter that went viral that had 100,000 retweets that insinuated I was friends with the people that were trying to kidnap the governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer. You might have saw it. It was trending on Twitter last week.
No. Who posted that?
I don't know, some anonymous Twitter account. That tweet was never asked to be removed. That tweet was never corrected. And yet it was so outrageous that even the mainstream media BuzzFeed said, no, Charlie Kirk is not involved in the plot to kidnap the Michigan governor. Now, why am I bringing that up? Is that they're allowed to spread blatant, intentional misinformation about me. And I quote a story that was widely reported, and then it gets adjusted 10 hours later, and they lock me out of my Twitter account. So I don't know how this will get resolved. However, I could tell you this, that these tech companies have way too much power. way too much power. We know this. We've said it. It's time for action because the fact that I am not able to tweet is actual direct election interference.
So this isn't just about politics. I have in front of me a report from Fox News' Andrew O'Reilly. The top White House coronavirus advisor today, Dr. Scott Atlas of Stanford University, he had his tweet removed because he said something that Anthony Fauci said back in March. He posted a tweet that masks do not work to protect you. And the White House top coronavirus medical expert had Twitter interfere in his First Amendment rights. But what do we do? As conservatives, we don't believe in big government. We don't want government over-regulating anything. But we've come to a point where the social media platforms are the most powerful organs in America. So what is the conservative answer to this threat? Where are you leaning towards, Charlie?
Where I'm leaning towards is that in the digital era, it's impossible to petition your government without platform access. And so if we believe in first principles and we believe in the First Amendment and natural rights, to be able to petition your government for redress and grievances, and you're not able to have access to your Twitter account, then your First Amendment rights are being violated. So Josh Hawley, for example, who you were playing some sound of,
yes,
he has the idea that if you have more than, let's say, 50 million active users, whatever arbitrary number, but a big number, right, then you are not allowed to kick off a U.S. citizen if they're not an anonymous account. Now, I don't know if I agree with that, but I think it's interesting.
So this is interesting. Are we talking about over a certain threshold, you treat that social media platform as a public utility?
The public square. Well, okay. I don't know if it's the public utility, but you treat it as if it was no different than you're trying to file a petition outside of the U.S. Congress. What am I getting at here is that these tech companies, under the current regulation, Section 230 does give them that immunity.
Yes.
I'm very skeptical that 230 is actually going to get repealed because these tech companies have an incredible amount of power legislatively, and a lot of Republicans take money from these tech companies. Now, the FCC wants to clarify it. I hope that makes some difference. The one thing, though, that they fear more than anything else, Dr. Gorka, is the Sherman Antitrust Act. Facebook is a legitimate monopoly.
Yes.
They are. When you look at what they have done through not just digital communication, video processing, and then all of a sudden they buy a hardware company, Oculus, and a messenger company, WhatsApp, that's as close to a vertically integrated monopoly that we have seen in the last 100 years. Google the same. And so I'm not necessarily saying that we should take the Elizabeth Warren approach here and hate all wealth creation and every single, you know, every vertical. But at the same time, I don't think we should be inherently dogmatic about saying that every corporation is always on our side. That is not the approach I think we should take.
Definitely. That is most certainly the case.
The nation was just days away from the election when the New York Post released their story that should have gotten widespread attention. The pictures that emerged from Hunter Biden's laptop were troubling ones. We need to learn more. But this much is clear. The American voter has every right to full access to stories that expose the behavior of the candidates for the highest office in the land. Mayor Giuliani exposes Hunter Biden's troubling computer content. Giuliani discussed that valuable laptop while on with Kevin McCullough on AM 970 The Answer in New York City.
Let's talk about the laptop. There seems to be some confusion about the contents on it and the actual, chain of command in terms of who got
it handed off to who, et cetera.
Can you clear that up for us?
Yeah, it's really simple. This is definitely his hard drive. There's no question about it. There's nothing Russian. There's no Russian derivation here. This is not Russian information. That's a complete usual Democrat shift lie.
Right.
He gets to tell, and the media does nothing about it because they suck up to the Democratic Party. This comes from Hunter Biden. I can verify it in 10 different ways, not the least of which is neither Hunter Biden nor Joe Biden have disputed a single thing that we put out on it.
That's the most compelling thing to me.
Yeah. Also, I have his signature on a receipt for it. I can compare it to about 10 things that only Hunter Biden would know. And I have independent witnesses now who are off the record who can identify it if we ever have to put it in court. So they can waste all the time they want that it isn't his. It is his. It reveals a massive criminal conspiracy. Hunter describes in his own words in a text, probably the most important text in here, that for 30 years, He's been collecting money for Pop. You've got to pay a lot of the family expenses out of that money. And then he's got to kick half of it back to Pop. That's in his words, in a text, to his half-sister. Not my words, his.
Right.
And everything else in here corroborates that. So far, they're up to about $30 to $40 million that they got that way. And it looks like they've been doing it, you know, for much smaller amounts with brother James Biden back when he was a senator. And James Biden was a lobbyist. And James Biden would get the money. Joe would do what he needed to do for the client. And the Biden brothers would whack up the cash.
Does the laptop reveal the timeline of when these deals went down? And can we verify whether or not he held office while conducting them?
Well, some of them he did, some of them he did. The Ukraine timeline, he held office. He got a bribe from Mykola Zloshevsky. The bribe was in the nature of money that was given to Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden had a no-show job. He did almost nothing for it. And Hunter, according to Hunter, Hunter had to give half of that to his father. And his father then intervened and helped to get a case dismissed involving not just Hunter Biden, but Mykola Zloshevsky, who is one of the biggest criminals in the Ukraine, who stole over $5 billion from the Ukrainian government. And because of the bribes that he paid to Biden and to President Poroshenko, has been able to keep the money. That's the Ukraine bribe. That's while he was vice president. Also, when he was vice president, he took his son to China. He was supposed to negotiate for the U.S. to have China remove its military from the islands they disputed with Japan. He was supposed to get them to reduce tariffs. Joe failed in his mission, as he always did, for the U.S. But Hunter, a month later, got a $1 billion commitment from the Bank of China, eventually $1.5 billion. Bank of China became the partner of Hunter Biden, which is extraordinary. Here's the partnership we have. The son of the vice president, the stepson of the Secretary of State, the nephew of one of the biggest organized criminals in the United States, and China. So while Joe Biden was negotiating for us and losing to China, his family was making millions from China. That's while he was vice president. That is a despicable sellout of the United States of America.
Well, and I want my listeners to be very clear. The Bank of China is part of the Chinese government. That means, Mayor, if we connect the dots, this means that he took Communist Chinese Party's money while selling out the U.S. on foreign policy, or not getting the job done, rather, on foreign policy.
Joe Biden has never been right on any matter of foreign policy.
The Giuliani interview with Kevin McCullough is lengthy. It covers a lot of material. Go to townhallreview.com for the entire discussion. Coming up.
No American government, right or left, has ever suppressed free speech as much as Twitter, Facebook, Google, and YouTube.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. This COVID-19 crisis has been straining the limits of our constitutional system. Over the next few years, we'll see a generation of new and grounded policy leaders emerge. They'll be prepared at Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more about the deadline for application at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. When the New York Post broke the story about the emails found on Hunter Biden's laptop, many people could have predicted the elite media would choose to ignore it, no matter how significant the story may turn out to be. But few would have believed that big tech would begin blocking the story and punishing those who linked to it. My friend and colleague Dennis Prager is one of the few who might have predicted it because his popular PragerU videos have been censored by big tech for years. Dennis looks at the New York Post story that the media elites have worked so tirelessly to cover up.
So these emails show that, in fact, Joe Biden, as vice president, did meet with one of the heads of Burisma, the Ukrainian company, that paid his son $50,000 a month. They paid him $50,000 a month for the same reason people paid Bill Clinton $500,000 to give a speech, to have access to Hillary Clinton. The level of corruption in the Democratic hierarchy is so much greater than the level of corruption in the Republican hierarchy that it takes your breath away. This is such a scandal. That's why the Democrats, I'm convinced, they want people to vote as early as possible. Because a lot of things come out in the last few weeks, and they don't want that to happen. This is the report from the New York Post. Hunter Biden introduced his father, then Vice President Joe Biden, to a top executive at a Ukrainian energy firm less than a year before Joe Biden pressured government officials in Ukraine into firing a prosecutor who was investigating the company, according to emails obtained by the New York Post. This is in the New York Post. So let's get that clear. Biden was introduced. Hunter Biden introduced his father to top executives at the Ukrainian energy firm Burisma less than a year before Biden pressured government officials in Ukraine to fire the prosecutor investigating Burisma. Get it? That's clear now? The never-before-revealed meeting is mentioned in a message of appreciation that Vadim Pozharsky, an advisor to the board of Burisma, allegedly sent Hunter Biden on April 17, 2015, about a year after Hunter joined the Burisma board at about $50,000 a year. Dear Hunter, thank you for inviting me to D.C. and giving an opportunity to meet your father and spend some time together. It's really an honor and pleasure, the email reads. An earlier email from May 2014 also shows Pozharsky, reportedly Burisma's number three executive, asking Hunter for, quote, advice on how you could use your influence, unquote, on the company's behalf. The blockbuster correspondence, which flies in the face of Joe Biden's claims that he's never spoken to my son about his overseas business dealings, is contained in a massive trove of data recovered from a laptop computer. I mean, did anybody believe that anyway? He never spoke to his son about his overseas business dealings? Sounding like a traditional publisher rather than a manager of Open Communications Network, Facebook's Andy Stone writes on Twitter, while I will intentionally not link to the New York Post, I want to be clear that this story is eligible to be fact-checked by Facebook's third-party fact-checking partners. In the meantime, we are reducing its distribution on our platform. That's Facebook and, of course, Twitter, we know. Twitter is being subpoenaed to the Senate to testify there. It's time to bust up these companies. They have completely abused the privileges that they have been given of being the conduits of information in the Western world. Completely. No American government, right or left, has ever suppressed free speech as much as Twitter, Facebook, Google, and YouTube. None. It's hard to have foreseen that the threat to free speech in America would come from private companies. Or public companies, as it happens. Update. Twitter is blocking sharing of the Post story with a note saying, quote, we can't complete this request because this link has been identified by Twitter or our partners as being potentially harmful. Yes, potentially harmful to the Democratic Party, for which all of these work. This should frighten you.
With a cluster of high-profile stories taking up so much bandwidth, it's easy to forget that we are days away from the confirmation of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the United States Supreme Court. I discussed the latest with Texas Senator John Cornyn. Judge Barrett, the Hill reports she's going to have a vote on the 26th of this month. Is that correct?
That's the plan, and I believe we will succeed. There is nothing more important than getting Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court. This is something that's going to last the next 25 or 30 years and finally restore the court to its rightful role as as a umpire calling balls and strikes, legally speaking, rather than being a policymaker. And I can't think of anything more important.
I have a legal question for you. 28 Code of Federal Regulations 600.1, grounds for appointing a special counsel reads, the attorney general or in cases in which the AG is recused, the acting attorney general will appoint a special counsel when he or she determines that criminal investigation of a person or matter is warranted and A, that investigation or prosecution of that person or matter by a United States attorney or litigating division of the Department of Justice would present a conflict of interest for the department or other extraordinary circumstances, and B, that under the circumstances, it would be in the public interest to appoint an outside special counsel to assume responsibility for the matter. It seems to me we need a special counsel for the Biden affair. Do you agree, Senator?
I think under these circumstances, particularly with the uncertainty of the election coming up, to make sure that this isn't just swept under the rug, maybe that would be the appropriate move. But obviously, as you know, this is the call that Bill Barr is going to make. I have a lot of confidence in him and that he'll make the right decision.
I'm just afraid that if President Trump wins re-election, anything that comes out of this will be judged to be an attempt to prove retroactively that he was correct. And if Joe Biden wins, nothing coming of it will be suspect as a cover-up. This is one of the unique circumstances where I believe you really ought to stand up a special counsel and let him go.
Well, I do think you make a good point. I just am not typically a fan of special counsel, but this may be one of those extraordinary circumstances.
Now, as to the vice president's conduct of this campaign, I'd like your remarking upon someone who just will not engage with the American people this way.
Well, sadly, he thinks this is working. His Zoom calls from the basement seem to be working for him. Unfortunately, you know, they're able to focus and just try to blame him for not stopping this pandemic, which nobody's been able to stop. I don't know why he thinks that that the president is responsible when, in fact, when he cut off flights from China back in January, Joe Biden and the Democrats called him a racist and a xenophobe. And now they say he didn't do enough. Unfortunately, that's the environment we're in now, and Joe Biden seems to think it's working for him.
Coming up.
Constantly you hear some of the activists saying, say her name, say her name, say Breonna Taylor's name. Okay, say the name of some of the unarmed whites who've been killed every year.
Larry Elder, when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt continues in a moment. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. The effort to paint President Donald Trump as a racist has no grounding in fact and is entirely without evidence. It is based on a hope of the left. The hope is that if they repeat it enough, people will believe it. President Trump has been asked repeatedly to denounce white supremacists and has repeatedly done so over a dozen times, in fact. And then he's asked again, as if for the first time. Larry Elder, a longtime Salem host and himself an African-American, takes on this absurd effort to discredit President Trump.
If you heard my interview with Sebastian Gorka, we talked about our town hall we had for Salem in Anaheim this weekend. Dennis Prager was there, Charlie Kirk, Dr. Gorka, myself. And during the town hall, I discussed the allegation that President Trump is a racist. And of course, I said, number one, Exhibit A for his alleged racism is what he supposedly said in Charlottesville. He allegedly said there were good Nazis and bad Nazis. And of course, he never said anything about that. He was talking about the debate over whether or not there should be a Confederate monument in the public square. He said there are good people on both sides of that debate. And he specifically said, quote, and I'm not talking about the white nationalists and the neo-Nazis because they should be condemned totally, end of quote. I said that. I also pointed out that of all the cities of over 100,000 population that voted for Donald Trump, the city that most voted for him is a city in Texas, Abilene. Abilene is almost 140 years old. They voted overwhelmingly for President Trump. What city just voted overwhelmingly for its first black mayor? Abilene, Texas. I mentioned that. And I also then talked about how these athletes like Doc Rivers and LeBron James and others will be very analytical, very fact-based when they talk about their game, talk about the other team, talk about why they won, why they lost. Often the stat sheet is right there at the ready as these players and coaches sit at the table having a post-game press conference. And I said, but the same mind, when asked about police shootings, when asked about George Floyd, when asked about Jacob Blake, that same mind then says, oh, why do these things keep happening? I don't know. I don't know why these things keep happening. If they lost games and then the owner said, why'd you lose? And the coach said, I don't know why. I don't know why these things keep happening. He'd be fired. And I pointed out that there are 50 million police-civilian interactions every single year. Out of that number, 11 million people are arrested. Out of that number, 60,000 police officers are assaulted. Last year, there were around 60 officers who were killed, which means there are at least twice as many officers killed every year as there are unarmed black people. Can you name an officer that was killed last year in the line of duty? Probably not. I pointed out that there were more unarmed whites killed every year than unarmed blacks. Constantly you hear some of the activists saying, say her name, say Breonna Taylor's name. Okay, say the name of some of the unarmed whites who've been killed every year. I'm waiting. So I pointed out all these things. My speech is over. A black man who was part of security comes up to me. And he says, I consider myself to be a very intelligent, knowledgeable man. Tonight, you said so many things I had never known. I am embarrassed. And I said, well, thank you. He said, no, don't interrupt. I want to tell you something. You've changed my life tonight. I never knew these things. I've been reacting emotionally to this. I had no idea that the rate at which the police have been killing blacks has declined 75% in the last 50 or 60 years, according to the CDC, the statute you cited. I had no idea about Abilene, Texas. I had no idea more unarmed whites were killed than unarmed blacks. I had no idea about the number of black people killed every year, over 7,000, almost all killed by other blacks. I had no idea any of this stuff. And I'm angry at myself for not being more informed. Thank you so much for what you've done to me. Wow. Wow. His name is Gary. I won't mention his last name. And he's the same age I am. In fact, 2 years younger, also from Los Angeles. And it turns out one of the four high schools I attended, he attended Washington High School. So we had so much in common. And he told me that he considered himself to be an extremely well-informed person about politics. And I told him stuff tonight he had never heard. What does that tell you? It tells you a whole lot of people in this country are ill-informed or misinformed or were lied to by our mainstream media that keeps pushing this phony narrative that the police are killing blacks just because they're black. And this phony narrative that Donald Trump is a racist. If your exhibit A for Donald Trump's alleged racism is what he said in Charlottesville, which is a lie, then I think we're probably in pretty good shape.
Coming up, Coach Lou Holtz on the coronavirus.
Please, please don't keep me alive by preventing me from living.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Our program is coming in today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. They are preparing grounded leaders who are impacting public policy and serving in the public square. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Lou Holtz was one of college football's greatest coaches of all time. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. He's also a man of extraordinary wisdom. At 83, he's still a delightful storyteller. But he caught some heat recently from Notre Dame University for daring to support President Donald Trump. Holtz sat in with Salem's Chris DeGaulle on AM 990, The Answer, out of Philadelphia.
Coach, you are... You're probably one of the best people to answer this question. I talk a lot about COVID because obviously it's all consuming in the news these days. Where do you put this in your mind when you talk about COVID and people? Look, there just are people that are on edge. They're nervous about COVID. And the president has consistently said after he got it, don't let it rule your life. I know you to be a deeply spiritual guy. I think you share my point of view. But where are you with coronavirus? You're a man of a certain age. Are you scared of it?
No, not at all. And here's what I say. Please don't keep me alive by preventing me from living. I'm an old man. My birthday candles used to cost more than a cake, but that's not the case anymore because that takes two cakes to get all my candles out of the pot. There was a time where I rode in the back of a truck. We rode the car without a seat belt. I rode a bicycle without a helmet. Everybody in the neighborhood had a BB gun. We shot at one another. But what made this country great was your choice. You had your freedom and you to choose whatever you want to do, but you also had to suffer the ramifications of it. Yes, this is very dangerous, particularly for certain people, elderly people, respiratory people, diabetic, overweight people. But young people, the death rate for young people is minimal. And I'm not anybody that dies is everybody's life is important. Don't get me wrong on that. But there have been like 400 positive cases in college athletics so far. Not one's been hospitalized. Bobby Bowden, he's 91 years of age. He spends 2 days in the hospital. He's out. President Trump has it. I mean, it isn't terminal for most people when you go look at it. And so we shut down the whole country. You have to also look at what are the ramifications. Leaders always look at it and say, okay, as a coach, I had to look at it from a player's point of view. I had to look at it from a coach's point of view. You got to look at it both. That's what leaders do. You have to look at the ramifications. Look at the suicidal rate. You look at the economy. You look at the depression. You look at welfare. It goes on and on, whereas doctors just look at it as life or death for one person. So I think it was a lady in charge of education in Los Angeles said, we'll look at opening up the schools the day after the election. What in the world does that have to do with anything? And what bothers me, this might be more political than anything.
Lou Holtz joins us, legendary Notre Dame football coach. And it's funny, you know, I guess because you have become such an outspoken advocate. I mean, you came through Philadelphia with Catholics for Trump, with Eric Trump, the president's son. I guess with that, you're certainly no stranger to criticism. You were criticized when you coached, and you'll certainly be criticized for wading into politics from even your old stomping grounds. A couple of headlines from late in August. Notre Dame disavows ex-coach Lou Holtz for his comments. Another column, Lou Holtz risks estrangement from Notre Dame. What do you feel about Notre Dame and some of the folks there upset with you?
Notre Dame is a beautiful place. I have three of our four children graduated from there. I spent 11 years there. It's beautiful. I can't say anything negative about Notre Dame. But when I come out and I'm against abortion and that's what I'm criticized for, I'll stand it. See, this is the thing. This isn't about me. I don't want to get involved with it, but I want to tell you, I'm not going to be silenced. I'm not going to be intimidated. And when you come out and you say something's against the left, then they're going to do everything they can to destroy you, to silence you, and things along that line. You look at it all the way down the line. As Rush Limbaugh told me many years ago, if you're an effective speaker and you speak out against something the left opposes, they'll do everything they can to destroy you. But I'm not going to be silenced because I think it's far too important that life's a matter of choice. If people say to me, well, I don't like the way he tweets, I'll say to him, okay, I understand that. Now, how did that affect your life? Well, it really didn't affect my life. Well, how about his policies, the policies he made that does affect it? Here's a guy who's very much the most presidential individual I've ever seen against abortion. My oldest granddaughter was adopted at birth. My oldest daughter could not have any children. She's now 27. She graduated from Houston, graduated from law school, passed the Texas law bar exam, and is 5 months pregnant. You don't want to have a child because you can't afford it. I understand it. You don't want to have a child because it's inconvenient. I understand. But let somebody else adopt it. And Catholics, in many ways, are under attack. There, make no mistake about it. So I am going to speak up. I'm not going to be silenced. And if you disagree with me, fine. That's what I'm saying. Let's have a discussion. But no, you can't have a discussion with radical people that don't want to hear anything you have to say. And when you're absolutely bad, you're wrong, and we're going to silence you and destroy you, be it, go at it. You know, I'm so old now that I got to tell you, a life sentence for murder doesn't really scare me. You know, might have been age 40, but not at my age.
Hey, Coach, do you, now that you've been around all facets of sport, from college to pros to the broadcast scene, you have many friends at all levels of sport, but like everything, it's been super politicized, hijacked by politics. Was that inevitable? Does that break your heart? And will it ever go back? Or is it just the genie's out of the bottle and that's where we are?
I think it will go back eventually. Yeah, it does break my heart. You know, for my father, 5 years, from age 7 to 12, I did not know my father because he was in the Pacific fighting for this country. I've been to Normandy. I look at the sacrifice people made. I was an officer in the Army. I visited troops all over the world. I understand the sacrifice they and their family made. And when you have people that don't have any respect for our flag or our national anthem, you know, that bothers me. But when I was coaching, I always told our football team at the first meeting, we will not use this football team to promote anything other than this university. We aren't going to use it to promote any cause. Now, if you want to do that on your own, God bless you. I support you. You can promote any cause you want, but you aren't going to use this football team to do that. And I feel the same way with a professional team. You know, we're doing this to promote the city. But if you want to do your own cause, that's great. But let's not use our team in order to do that.
For more on that conversation, go to townhallreview.com. Coming up.
This is Gavin Newsom, this lunatic governor, crazed with power, these tyrants.
The latest from California when we return with the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt.
If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook, and in it you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day.
This week, with the nation on the eve of an election, the New York Post releases an astounding story on Joe Biden and on his son, Hunter Biden.
It reveals a massive criminal conspiracy.
A look at the complete double standards for Christian schools relative to public school.
So if you were a small public school, you could open in the fall, and if you were a small private school, you couldn't.
And a court challenge of a church in Washington, D.C.
It's not up to the court to tell the church how it is to worship.
Plus, the unwillingness of local DAs to simply enforce the law.
No one will be held accountable for their lawless actions if the local prosecutor refuses to do his job.
We've got all this and more. To subscribe, go to ChristianOutlook.com. That's ChristianOutlook.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Media have been reporting on an uptick in COVID-19 cases nationwide. That's something we knew would happen come fall. But here's a bit of information they tend to ignore. Deaths are still in decline. Meanwhile, Democratic governors continue to abuse their power and hold citizens in smothering lockdown. Salem host Mike Gallagher has the latest.
This is from the Los Angeles Times. As holidays approach, California unveils new rules on family gatherings and social events. You want to get with your family at Thanksgiving? It's coming up. Christmas? Well, good luck if you live in California. Listen to the new rules. California released rules for socializing over the holidays. For example, attendance. These are the latest California rules. Gatherings that include more than three households are prohibited. Gather outdoors. Gatherings that occur outdoors are significantly safer than indoor gatherings. All gatherings must, not might, or maybe, must be held outside. Attendees may go inside to use the restrooms as long as the restrooms are frequently sanitized. So I guess if you're not frequently sanitizing the restroom, you got to go in the woods. This is Gavin Newsom, this lunatic governor, crazed with power, these tyrants. So Newsom has said over and over, the federal government, Trump bungled the response, right, to COVID. So what does Trump do? Operation Warp Speed. Let's race round the clock. Pfizer, Lilly, all these companies, 24/7. Let's get a vaccine. We'll get a vaccine. That's what they want, right? Federal response. Oh, not so fast, says Governor Tyrant Newsom.
Just to clarify, are you saying that no COVID-19 vaccine at all would be distributed in California, either through public health or private health care systems, until the state reviews and approves it?
Correct. We will review. That's why my advisory committee is up and running. They'll review the assertions. They'll make independent determinations of the veracity and efficacy of these immunizations, these doses.
Got it. So you're not trusting a vaccine because it's coming through the federal government, the FDA, CDC. No, no. Newsom, Cuomo said the same thing. Heck, Kamala Harris said that the other night, couple weeks ago. If Trump says that there's a vaccine ready, I'm not going to take it. Now the Democrats are now anti-vaxxers. They don't trust the vaccination. And they're going to vet you because there won't be any bureaucracy with California approving a vaccine, right? That won't take months, maybe a year. No, they don't want. This is what we're facing.
Thanks for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producers Russell Shubin, producer Charlie Richard, David Posian, Michael Cook, Alex Perez, Adam Ramsey, Ben Brigman, Harley Eide, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thanks for joining us.